You could be right and I could be wrong. We could just fight or we could be strong. You could be right and I could be wrong. We could just fight or we could.
This is Bridge the Gap with Mark and Dave, the program that seeks for the truth no matter where it is found. I'm Mark.
And I'm David.
The voice was heard by everybody on the face of this land. You're familiar with the scripture and where it's coming from, 3 Nephi 9:1, right? Mm-hmm. Right after the destruction, people have been in 3 days of darkness, and all of a sudden this voice just comes from heaven. All the people heard the voice upon the face of this land crying. Who are all the people, and what is this land? This land is the promised land, and all the people are those who survived the earthquakes, fires, and destruction. All of them heard a voice.
It makes it sound like right after that, they gathered around the temple and then Jesus appeared to them in 3 Nephi 11.
Mm-hmm.
But in truth, when you study this, it happened almost a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And so this voice comes to them, tells them all these things, and almost 11 months goes by before he appears to them.
Mm-hmm.
A much longer period of time than I had thought. And when he did finally appear to them, there were only 2,500 people who saw him that first time. Now, there were a lot more people that survived. But the question is, why 11 months later, after hearing what you just read, did 2,500 people find themselves at the temple site where Jesus appeared? Was something inside of them telling them to go there to meet Christ because of what they heard 11 months earlier, and they prepared for 11 months for that time when they would actually have a personal experience in seeing the face of God? And the rest of the people also heard that voice but didn't show up.
So were they all transfigured?
These people were not. They just survived the tribulations.
No, when he came down.
Well, this is a good question.
Yeah.
But these were special people that got to see something that everybody else didn't get to see.
Right.
Jesus Christ did things to them. He personally let them touch his hands and feel his feet.
So they had to be transfigured, according to what we're talking about.
It doesn't say.
Right. That's interesting. Because it sounds like he really came down. It wasn't a vision.
Right. And when he was resurrected and appeared to the 12 apostles, and he appeared to the disciples on the road to Emmaus, and he appeared to 500 other people, all in the old Jerusalem.
Were they all transfigured?
No. I mean, it doesn't say that they were. He just appeared to them. Let the doubting Thomas touch the nails in his hands and in his feet.
See, so that's what it is. If Christ in his full glory comes to you, you have to be transfigured. If Christ comes to you, not necessarily in his full glory, is that possible? Possibly part of it?
I do know the answer that if he comes in his fullness of glory, you can't withstand his presence.
Right.
But if he appears to you, like after he was resurrected to Mary Magdalene, for example,
right,
and when he let Thomas touch him, what version of Christ was manifesting to the people? I don't know.
And I believe it was the resurrected physical part. Like, I believe that.
Well, you could feel him.
Right.
You could touch him.
Right.
That's part of the empirical evidence.
So maybe he just wasn't in his fullness of glory.
He
can control it,
somehow,
right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. Since we're just talking, that's where I get back to the empirical evidential experience is possible while in the flesh. At least three of the five senses are going to ratify to you that Christ is real. You'll hear him, you'll see him, and you'll touch him.
Mm-hmm.
You will touch. That's why it's so important that we touch the prints in his hands and in his feet, because we need the empirical evidence that he is real. It's not some metaphysical.
We don't need it.
It's an assurance of who he is.
But what's interesting is by that point that you get to have that experience, you don't need it anymore. It's almost like a gift because you've gotten to the point where you don't need it.
Mm.
I don't know. That's how I see it. Like, if your goal is to just get that physical evidence, I think you'll never get it. But if you have faith and you work on that faith to a point where you believe so much without the physical evidence that it is as real to you as anything. Because here's the thing too, like once you have that experience, no longer do you need to turn around and be like, see, it is true. And like, now I can prove it. You're not going to say that. You're not going to have that desire to like, I can prove it now. Right? I mean, that's how I see it.
Well, it's personal anyway. You don't need to prove it to anybody else. You just have to prove it to yourself, right?
But I think a lot of those people want, or anyways,
want people to think they're crazy. Is that a pride thing?
No, I'm saying the thing that you're talking about like people wanting proof.
Yeah, I see. I hear what you're saying.
As soon as you believe enough without seeing, then he's like, okay. Now I can't even hold it back from you.
Well, that goes along the lines of the world, seeing is believing, but with God, believing is seeing.
Totally.
It's the reversed order of things. Mm-hmm. God says, believe, and then you'll get to see. You receive not a witness until after a trial of your faith. Mm-hmm. But the world's like, look, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. And so they don't believe anything. And that's what keeps them. That's part of the veil of unbelief. I'm not going to believe it unless I see it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what we've been indoctrinated mm-hmm. into believing our whole lives? Mm-hmm. I'll believe it when I see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the way of salvation.
Well, choosing to believe, that's the first step, which I'm just so grateful for some reason I do believe. But like I could see how if you didn't believe, that first step of choosing to believe, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Okay. I'll believe, you know, and yeah. It's like, that's the first step for a lot of people, right? Like, that's not an easy step because you almost feel like you're going backwards. Okay, I'll believe in the hocus pocus, you know, yeah. But it's like, no, you're actually, that's exercising faith and that's starting a new journey. Like that's progressing in a way that you've never progressed before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's a thing called the lectures of faith. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read them?
I've heard about them a lot and learned about them, but never read them.
So in the lectures of faith, Joseph Smith talks about what you're talking about. And he makes it very clear. In order to fully surrender and give yourself to Christ and the Father and do what he expects of you, he would not expect you to do that without an assurance. And
when you say do that?
Completely surrender and give yourself over to him and fulfill whatever mission he's going to require of you, which will require great sacrifice. When you get to that level. Aren't you
combining though? It's like, I feel like the first part we do have to do, completely surrender to him and then he'll give us the witness and then we can complete our mission.
Well, I just want to read the lectures of faith and uh-huh. not speculate.
I know for me, he does expect me to fully surrender myself to him before I see him physically. And when I say surrender myself to him, I don't mean complete my specific mission that he's called me to do.
Right. So that's why I'm saying I don't know. I don't know how the two relate and can coexist.
I guess what I'm saying is I like when I feel or I hear something about doctrine, whatever. I think about it, I ponder it, and I'm like, okay, here's how it would make sense to me based off of my knowledge, experience, belief, all this. And then I hear the actual quote, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's exactly. Yeah, and exactly it, to me, it's faith building.
Okay.
So is it this? Let us here observe that three things are necessary in order that any rational and intelligent being may exercise faith in God unto life and salvation.
That sounds...
First, the idea that he actually exists. Secondly, a correct idea of his character, perfections, and attributes. Thirdly, an actual knowledge that the course of life which he is pursuing is according to his will. For without an acquaintance with these three important facts, the faith of every rational being must be imperfect and unproductive.
This is it. It's an assurance, right? So three, having the assurance that they were pursuing a course which was agreeable to the will of God. So there's some things that we need help with because you want to make sure that you're following a course that's agreeable to
God. That's
what all you care about, anything. Right? Ugh, right. That I know. And I do too. And so here we go. For such was
and always will be the situation of the saints of God. It's natural. See, it speaks to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That unless they have an actual knowledge that the course that they are pursuing is in accordance with the will of God, they will grow weary in their minds and faint, for such has been and always will be the opposition in the hearts of unbelievers and those that know not God. If you have to keep believing forever and ever and ever and never obtain a sure knowledge, physical, empirical evidence of God's existence, you're eventually going to grow weary and faint.
And he doesn't say a physical empirical evidence.
Yeah, he doesn't. But he's just saying not sure which knowledge. Which
for someone, maybe that's what it is. Maybe another person, that's not what it is in terms of what it's saying there.
Yeah.
But at some point, I do believe that that does become part of it.
So keeping it going, for such has always been and always will be the opposition in the hearts of the unbelievers and those that know not God against the pure and unadulterated religion of heaven. The only thing which ensures eternal life, all that worship God according to his revelations receive the truth in the love of it and submit themselves to be guided, directed by his will. Now, this is what I find interesting too, and drive them to the such extremities that nothing short of an actual knowledge of their being. So I don't know what that means. You're challenging me and saying, well, that's not empirical evidence
necessarily.
You're just saying it could be something else, but it is an actual knowledge. That's the word right there.
Is it the actual word in the lecture, or is it because you
in the lectures of faith it says and drive them to such extremities that nothing short of an actual knowledge of their being the favorites of heaven. That's what I find interesting too, that you have to know actual knowledge that you're the favorites of heaven. What does that mean? And what is a favorite of heaven? It's the elect of God, by the way. It's what Nephi says. I, Nephi, having been born of goodly parents, right? Mm-hmm. Being highly favored of the Lord all the days of my life. He knows he's a favorite. He's an elect. The elect are God's favorites.
The only way I can accept it is like, and they're his favorites because of what they do and their desires and what they're like, right? It's
a title, not a favoritism.
Yeah.
Well, he's not playing favorites. He's giving you roles and responsibilities and stewardships that hold you accountable.
Because of you.
Your valiancy and the premortal existence.
And not to say that you've earned it, but that you will fulfill it. Like, so it's almost like he wouldn't.
It's you're the not family the... of Christ. Not all are his children. And when I say that, I mean this, that we're all born as spiritual children of God, the Father, but we don't all stay in his family.
Right. Is that the same? Many are called, few are chosen.
The chosen are God's family. He chooses because, them.
But isn't it also because we choose to accept it?
Yes, it's
many
all...
Many are well, called, but some don't choose themselves to say, yes, okay, and I...
Well, this but is getting into choose. The more difficult to comprehend stuff, but it's when did you choose it? Did you choose it in the premortal existence?
Yes. Or,
yes, that is the answer.
Yeah.
You did choose it in the premortal existence, and you just have to awaken and remember what you already chose.
Right.
And so God knows his family before they came to this earth. They came to this earth to be tested and discover that they're members of his family. Having forgotten all things, we have to remember what we decided already before we came to this earth. We decided to follow Christ. We have to come to this earth for having forgotten all things, remember that we decided to follow Christ and fulfill our mission and return back to him.
Yeah.
I've been teaching in a primary class for the last few years, and recently we have been learning a new song that the primary will be singing at the end of their primary program in September 2019. When the primary chorister stood up and started putting flashcards in front of the class trying to teach the primary students that song, when the words started coming up, it just struck me as true. Then we started singing the song together, and my primary kids were just singing the song and having a good time while I was trying not to cry, because the truthfulness of that song just struck me so powerfully as I was learning those words, because it's talking about the estates and what we did before we came to the earth. We chose Christ in our first premortal estate, and we will choose him again because we chose him the first time. We will choose him as we remember what we chose. And I just love that doctrinally correct song. And it is a battle against good and evil. We already fought the battle spiritually, and we won. Michael, our archangel, fought the battle, Revelations 12. Now we've come down to this earth. We just have to remember that's who you are, a great warrior who has already fought in a spiritual battle and defeated Satan once. Will you defeat him again and keep your second estate and have glory added upon you forever and ever? I think you will when you remember what you did the first time.
Choose good from evil, to be prepared for the battle to come. For Satan tried to destroy us forever, to make us turn from the things we were taught. But nothing could keep us from choosing Jesus, for we love
That's it for this episode of Bridge the Gap.
Truth Seekers.